General Organic Biochemistry, a brief survey. The saturated hydrocarbons. If organic chemistry is a chemistry of one element carbon, how can it be a subject all by itself? More rules of nomenclature? Why don't we just use the nomenclature rules we've already studied? And what? Paraffin wax and petroleum jelly are in the same class as gasoline? You've got to be kidding. In this unit on saturated hydrocarbons, we're going to give you an idea of what organic chemistry is all about. We'll talk about the basics of structure in organic chemistry, and then we will deal with the specific group, the alkanes. We'll talk about nomenclature of alkanes, properties and reactions of these compounds. We'll talk about cyclic alkanes or cycloalkanes, and we'll briefly mention how to classify carbons. Let's get going. I dare say you probably heard about the oil spill that occurred in the Gulf of Mexico in the spring of 2010. And you probably wondered what was going to happen to all of that oil and what was going to be the impact on the natural surroundings that were exposed to that oil and what were going to be the long-term effects and how could a person go about dealing with cleaning up this. Well, now that you've started your section on organic chemistry, you have a pretty good idea of what kind of structure and properties these oils may have, as they are light to heavy hydrocarbons. What are they going to do? What are these dispersants that they were going to use? Well, as you know, those hydrocarbons are going to be more soluble in each other than they are going to be in water. So they tend to clump. And hopefully some of them are going to evaporate, some of the very light ones like methane and so forth. But the heavier ones are going to be entangled in globules. And those globules then could very well wash up on the coast. And that's what they're being referred to as tar balls. On the other hand, the company responsible for the spill began to add, well, I think they added over 1 million gallons of dispersant. What is this dispersant, and what does it do? When you get to the section on carboxylic acids, derivatives of acids, salts of the acids, and so forth, you'll begin to get into a study of what some of these dispersant materials may be. You're going to find that organic chemistry is very relevant to the things that go on around you in your daily life. Now let's start with the structure, an introduction. What's different about organic compounds? Well, organic compounds are generally molecules that have a carbon backbone or a string of carbons, and it can go anywhere from being one carbon long to many, many, many carbons long. Let's look at some of these. Now, if you have models, get them out, because we're going to build some simple organic structures. But if you don't have models, then hopefully the things that we're showing you on the screen will be adequate to explain what we're talking about. If you do have models, use 4 black atoms. Those represent carbon. And attach them in a straight line. And I use the word straight with reservation. Because when you put these 4 carbons together, one carbon bonded to another, to another, to another, the question you have to ask yourself when you look at your models, is it actually a straight line? And if you don't have models, well, it's more like this. One carbon bonds to another, and bonds to another. Now, we call this a straight chain, even though it's not really a straight chain because these bonds are angular. If we take this structure right here that we've just built And if we fill every available spot with hydrogen, for example, we're going to find it looks something like this. A molecule with four carbons attached to each other, and then each molecule has a certain number of places that something else, maybe hydrogen, can attach. Hydrogen is represented by these white atoms that you see. If you are using models, how about getting four more of those carbons and bonds and build this structure? If you're not using models, though, let me show you. Your structure is going to look like this. Here's one carbon bonded to another. Yeah, two carbons bonded there and one here. That's another structure you could have. Now, if you're using models, does yours look like this? If not, this is the way, if you're not using models, this is the way your structure should appear. Now, if we take that structure and put hydrogen in every remaining place, it will look like this. Do you see how that goes? So that there are three of these carbons attached to three hydrogens, attached to a carbon in the middle with one hydrogen. See him? He looks like he's kind of sitting on it. Yeah. And this is the way we can depict it if we're drawing a spatial diagram. Well, what's the formula for that? Well, the formula for that, how many carbons does it have? It has four. And how many hydrogens? Count them out. And there are 10. So the formula is C4H10, the classic formula that we would have for the four-carbon structure. But there's another way to do it. Remember the first one we did? Sure. And here is that structure. So this one is also C4H10. But there are definitely two different structures. And when you have two molecules that can have the same formula but different structures, those structures are called isomers. They are called isomers. Let's look again at this structure and ask the question, how many bonds does each carbon have? Well, let's start with the carbon on the left. It has 1, 2, 3, 4 bonds. It has four bonds, three to hydrogen and one to the other carbon. Well, what about the next carbon? This next carbon has 1, 2, 3, 4 bonds also. Now, I grant that one bond is between the two carbons, and we counted it once already for the first carbon, but oh, it counts as one of the bonds for the second carbon also. Let's go now to the third carbon. 1, 2, 3, 4 bonds there also. Well, you know what's going to happen, don't you? When we look at this last carbon, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. The point that I'm trying to make is each carbon has four bonds. However, there is an easier way to draw that. If you had to draw those four carbons out in a skeleton and put those 10 hydrogens around it every time you wanted to write this compound, it would get to be a real pain. There is an easier way, a shorthand way, and here it is. Look again at this part right here. This is a carbon with three hydrogens. Write it like this, CH3. Now we go to the next carbon. It only has two hydrogens. Write it like this, CH2. And then the next one, CH2. And the last one, well, it's CH3. And there is a bond understood between each of those carbons. Yes, that's a much easier way to draw it. Look at this one. Oh, that would be really rough to have to write out every time, wouldn't it? But try it like this. Here's this CH3 group right here. Now let's go to the CH group right here, and there it is. And then to the CH3 group, and there it is. And you see that carbon with a hydrogen on it in the middle is short a bond. It only has three bonds. But this is why. Here's the rest of it, the other CH3. And we will call this other one a branch, or we will talk about branches as we get to nomenclature. Let's do several of these. Let's start with this group over here. This is going to be CH3. Now we go to this one right here, which will be CH2. Now we have this one. What is it? Well, it's a CH that is attached to a CH3. And how about this one right here? Well, this is another CH3. Now, there's another way that that could have been done, a little bit even more shorthanded. We could have written it as CH3, CH2, CH, and then we could have combined these two methyl groups and written them like this, parentheses, CH3, close parentheses, 2. Get the idea? Let's try another one. Oh, here's this one. Wow, look, we've got a lot of stuff to look at here. All right, let's start with, where shall we start? Let's start with this group right here, this carbon. And that is a CH3. Our next carbon, this one right here, is a CH2. Then this carbon right here is bonded to this carbon over here. It's bonded to this carbon over here, this carbon up here, and this carbon down here. So this is a C. And let's put a parenthesis. Let's use it as branches. CH3 here, and a CH3 here. And now we're coming over to this next carbon right here, and this is a CH2, and then our last carbon, which is a CH3. Now, remember, this carbon right here is also bonded to four things. The carbon above it, the carbon below it, the carbon over here to this side, and the carbon over here to this side. So always remember to count to four bonds for each of your carbons. Now, let's combine this and do it in a condensed fashion, reminiscent of this. This is CH3, CH2, C, parentheses, CH3, close parentheses, 2. Then we're ready to do these last two, CH2 and CH3. So there are two different ways you could do this. You could do it like this, or you could do it like this, and you're likely to see it either way. Now we're ready to talk about the alkanes. We'll talk a little about their structure. We'll mention some of their properties. We'll talk about just a little on reactions, and we'll talk about when they form rings. Let's get going. This is the first group of the hydrocarbons that we're going to talk about. Now, alkanes are hydrocarbons. That's hydrocarbons, compounds of carbon and hydrogen. And they have a basic formula. The basic formula of the alkanes is C to the N, H to the 2N plus 2. Now, of course, those are subscripts and not superscripts. Let me give you an example. The formula C2H6 is a hydrocarbon. Now, N is 2. So that means there should be two carbons. How many hydrogens can be figured? Well, 2 times N plus 2 would be 2 times 2 plus 2 to give us 6, and that's where the 6 comes in. So if you're asked, does that fit the basic form CnH2n plus 2? The answer is, yes, it does. What would be the formula for a 3-carbon alkane? Now, the value of N then is 3, and so the formula would be C3H8. Did you get it? Well, let's try another one. What would be the formula for a 7-carbon alkane? Now figure it out. There are 7 carbons, so how many hydrogens are there going to be? And the answer is 16. So you have C7H16. How about it? Got the idea? Okay, let's go on. Now let's talk about naming alkanes. You've got to learn to count in organic, and we're going to count to 10. So what we're going to do is count the 10 basic alkane names that you have to learn. Here we go. It's methane, and we'll talk about the structures of these in greater detail in just a minute, but right now, just get these. Methane, and leave yourself a little space with each one. Ethane, propane, butane, propane, butane, does that sound familiar? Yeah. Pentane, hexane, leave yourself a little space with each one now. Heptane, octane, octane, do you suppose that has anything to do with fuels, gasoline maybe? Noname. That's no name. That's not no name. That's no name. And decane. We're not going to go higher than that with the nomenclature. Okay, let's take them one at a time. And let's start with methane. Now, methane has 1 carbon. If it has 1 carbon, what is its formula? And its formula is CH4. Well, what is the structure of methane? There's only 1 possible structure for methane, and that is a carbon bonded to 4 hydrogens. And we'll get the structure of it more exactly in just a few minutes. Now let's look at ethane. Ethane has 2 carbons. So what's its formula? Well, let's see. Ethane's formula is C2H6. Okay, how many structures are possible? Well, you're going to understand how to figure how many structures are possible a little later, but right now, let me tell you that there's only 1 possible structure for ethane, and that is a carbon bonded to 3 hydrogens, and that carbon is also bonded to another carbon bonded to 3 hydrogens. We will show this structure in greater detail in just a minute. Propane, however, is C3H8, 3 carbons, 8 hydrogens. Got to fit that formula. Well, how many structures are possible for propane? Well, there's really only 1 structure, and that is a carbon bonded to 3 hydrogens, bonded to a carbon bonded to 2 hydrogens, bonded to a carbon bonded to 3 hydrogens. That's right. We'll do it in greater detail in just a minute. Now, butane has 4 carbons, so what is its formula? C4H10, that's right. Now, how many structures are going to be possible here? Well, can you figure it out? I'm not sure you're ready to figure it out, so let me show you. There's this one right here. The carbon bonded to 3 hydrogens, bonded to a carbon bonded to 2 hydrogens, bonded to a carbon bonded to 2 hydrogens, bonded to a carbon bonded to 3 hydrogens. Here's another one, though. This one has 3 carbons in a row, and there's a branch off the middle. Well, how about this as a third one? How about having 3 carbons in a row and a branch off the end? And I want you to look at that and then put a big X through it, because that one is not possible. You're going to learn in a minute that that one is just like the first one, but we're getting there. Well, here's the easy way to do it. Put down the 4 carbons in a chain. Carbon actually has 4 carbons, so let's put them in here. That's the backbone of your molecule. Now, let's fill in each of those with hydrogen. Well, that first carbon has 1 bond to another carbon, so it's got 3 other bonds it has to fill in. Therefore, it needs three hydrogens. The second carbon was bonded to the first carbon and the third carbon, so it needs four bonds also, but it needs two hydrogens to take care of it. How many hydrogens do we need for the next carbon? Well, we need two hydrogens for that one also. And the last carbon has only one bond to the previous carbon, so it needs how many hydrogens? And the answer is, it needs three hydrogens. Now, that is the first structure. You've just taken the skeleton of the molecule, the carbon skeleton, spread it out, and then you filled in with hydrogens. Well, how about this one right here? Oh, that's that other structure, remember that we said? Yeah. So it's got a carbon bonded to a carbon bonded to a carbon, and the middle carbon has a branch of another carbon on it. So let's go through and fill in the hydrogens on it. Can you do that? Let's stop for a minute and let you fill in the hydrogens on each of these carbons, and then I'll show you what the structure should look like. It becomes this right here. Does it make sense to you? Do you see how you get it? Remember, each carbon must have four bonds. And for the hydrocarbons then, the bonds that it does not already have to other carbons must be filled in with hydrogens. All right, let's move on. Okay, how do you distinguish between these two? Suppose you wanted to talk about number two as opposed to number one. How could you distinguish between them? Well, that's easy. By their names. So nomenclature is really important to us. All right, we've mentioned these right here, methane, ethane, propane, butane. Let's quickly mention the rest of them. After butane is pentane. It's five carbons. And then there's hexane with six carbons. Are you going back and filling in the spaces in your earlier notes? Heptane is seven carbons. Octane, logically, is eight carbons. Nonane is nine carbons. And decane is 10 carbons. Methane, ethane, propane, butane, pentane, hexane, heptane, octane, nonane, and decane. Now, we'll look at the fundamental rules for naming the compounds. For example, let's start out with this compound right here. Now, I want you to notice that it is an isomer of hexane. And why did I say that? Well, count the number of carbons. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and a branch is 6. So it is 6 carbons long. That's why it's an isomer of hexane. I want you to find the longest straight chain. Well, you say, oh, that's easy. There it is. Well, sort of. You could look at it that way, or you could look at it that way, couldn't you? Well, you say either way, going from left to right or right to left. Yeah, but what about this? This is a straight chain also. Yeah, it's a 6-carbon straight chain. And you're saying, wait a minute, how do I know it's a straight chain? If you can put your pen down and draw a line connecting carbons, as many carbons as you can, without lifting your pen and without backtracking over what you've already drawn, then you have drawn a straight line, or you have indicated a straight chain. Well, you could do it like this, but, well, in any case, whichever one of the four ways you want to mark it, it's still pentane. There are 5 carbons in the longest continuous chain. Now I want you to locate and number any branches. Well, we'll look at the chain that's going across the continuous chain. We'll say, oh, here's a branch. Yeah. Or we could say, here's a branch. Depends on which way you lay out your straight chain, doesn't it? Well, in either case, it's a 1-carbon branch. Now, let's name the branch. Well, there's the branch. It's a one-carbon branch, but instead of calling it methane, we call it methyl. We name the branches with a YL on the end, methyl. That's methyl. The compound is 2-methylpentane. It's pentane because the straight chain, or the longest continuous chain, is 5 carbons, and that is a pentane. You say, well, but wait a minute. Pentane is it has an extra hydrogen in there more than this one does. Yeah, but we've replaced one of the hydrogens with a branch. So it's still pentane. And the branch is methyl. Okay, so it's a methyl pentane. Where did 2 come from? It came from the numbering, right here. We numbered it so as to give the branch the lowest possible number. You could have numbered it from the other way, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it would have been 4-methylpentane. But 4-methylpentane is not a correct name if 2-methylpentane is possible. There's some common branches you need to learn. Here they go. Methyl is 1. So get that one down, methyl. And I put a little dash there to indicate that's going to be bonded to something else. Here's another one, ethyl. Ethyl, CH3, CH2, bonded to something. Here's another branch, N-propyl. N stands for normal, or propyl in a straight chain. It means it's 3 carbons in a row, 3 continuous carbons, CH3, CH2, CH2. That is what we call N-propyl, or normal propyl. There's another propyl. It's called isopropyl. You see that the branch is coming off the middle carbon of these 3? That's right. That is an isopropyl group. So make sure you know each one of these. Methyl, ethyl, normal propyl, and isopropyl. And there are more to learn, so don't give up yet. Here's some more that I want you to look at. Here is normal butyl. Now, it's 4 carbons in a chain. 1, 2, 3, 4, see them? And that's bonded to something else at the end of that little chain. But then there are 2 different ways to branch the butyls. You can have the butyl as a secondary butyl, in which you are branching off the second carbon of the 4-carbon chain. That is called a secondary butyl, or a sec butyl. There is another butyl, and it is called an isobutyl. Isobutyl. Now notice an isobutyl kind of looks like it's 3 carbons in a chain with a carbon branched off the second one, but the end of the chain, that little 3-carbon chain, is hooked to something else. That's an isobutyl. And there's one more, and that's tertiary butyl, in which you've got the same structure as the one you have for isobutyl, but instead of bonding off to the end, you're bonded off to the carbon in the middle. And you say, I'm never going to get these straight. Yes, you are. You're going to get these straight because you've got to get them straight. And it just takes looking at them and writing them down a lot of times, and takes a lot of nomenclature practice. Now, let's have a look at this one. Let's try naming it. Okay, what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to find the longest chain. That longest continuous chain is called the parent chain. The parent chain. So lay it out. And it's kind of easy to lay it out on this one. There it is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 carbons long. It doesn't matter which way you count it. Any way you look at it, the longest chain is pentane. That's right. Now, what's attached to pentane? Ooh, what is attached to pentane? Well, we have 2-methyl groups. Right, 2-methyl groups. Now, how can you say 2-methyls? Well, don't just say 2-methyls. Use the term dimethyl. So what we're looking at now is a dimethyl pentane. A dimethyl pentane. Okay, now where are these dimethyls attached? Well, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I believe the dimethyls, those right there, are attached on the second carbon and on the fourth carbon. You got it? Second carbon and fourth carbon. So, what do you name the thing? The name is 2,4-dimethylpentane. Notice the punctuation. A comma between the 2 and the 4, and a dash between the 4 and the dimethyl. Got it? 2,4-dimethylpentane. Yes, it's fun stuff. Try this one. Now, have a look at it really carefully. Find the parent chain. Did you find the parent chain? Yeah. Count it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 carbons that are continuous. So the parent chain is what? Right, the parent chain is pentane. Now, what branches are on here? There are 2 methyl branches, exactly. Where are they located? Well, both of the methyl branches happen to be located on the same carbon. And what's that carbon number? It's carbon 2. So the name is 2,2-dimethylpentane. Now, students often ask me, well, why can't I just call it 2-dimethylpentane? Every branch must have its own address, even if it's a repeat of another address. It must have its own address. So you have to name one branch is at carbon 2 and the other branch is at carbon 2. So it is 2,2-dimethylpentane. Have the idea? Good. What about this one? Now be careful. Look at it carefully. See what you come up with. Well, let me ask you, can you find the parent chain? Do I need to show you where it is? Look at this. There's the parent chain. Now, give it a name. And what did you come up with? Well, I came up with 2,4-dimethylhexane. Do you agree? Perhaps you came up with 3,5-dimethylhexane. How about that? No, that's not the right answer. Why? Because when we have a choice, we use the lowest set of numbers. That's right, the lowest set of numbers. Hence, the name should be 2,4-dimethylhexane. And that is a good choice based on the lowest set of numbers concept. Got the idea? Good. Let's move on. Let's make it a little more interesting this time. Now look at this carefully and find the parent chain. Where is it? Let me show you where it is. There it is. All right. Now jot down what you think might be the answer. And then we'll work through this. Okay, what's attached to the parent chain? 3 methyl groups, right here. See them? Now figure out how to count them. In which direction are you going to count? You're going to count this way. Yeah. Why are you going to count in that direction? Because it gives you the lowest set of numbers. You see, if you count in this direction, it gives you the numbers 2, 3, and 5. If you count in the other direction, from the left-hand side, it's going to give you the numbers 2, 4, and 5. And remember, you always want to count with the lowest set of numbers. So the name then becomes 2,3,5-trimethylhexane. Did you get that? If not, do you understand why? And 2,3,5-trimethylhexane is an isomer of what? Count up those carbons, and it is an isomer of nonane. Good job. Now, look, you may ask the question, Why didn't we use isopropyl for this group right here? Why didn't we use isopropyl and call this a 2-methyl-4-isopropyl pentane? Well, we didn't use isopropyl because had we done so, then the parent chain would have been shorter than the longest possible parent chain. So we didn't do it because that group, that isopropyl group, is a part of the parent chain, and you can't name a part of the parent chain as a branch. So therefore, it's 2,3,5-trimethylhexane. Got it? Now, try this one. Write down what you think it should be. Find the parent chain. Count it very carefully. Now, in this case, we have an isopropyl that is not a part of the parent chain. So you can use it in the naming of this. And if you count, and you count all the way across the top, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you get heptane as the parent chain. And there's no way that you can count with the any part of the isopropyl as part of the parent chain and get a 7-carbon straight chain. So the isopropyl is a branch. The name of this then becomes 2-methyl-4-isopropylheptane. Got the idea? Good. Well, now let's try some. The first thing I think we ought to do is find the parent chain. So let's see. If I start right here and draw a line and count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 7 carbons in the parent chain. Wonder if that's the longest one we can have. Well, why don't we get rid of that parent, that line, and try a different line? Let's look. Let's see how we can do this. Let's get an eraser here. Get rid of this 7 and get rid of this line. And try a different line along here. Let's go back over here and start and count this way. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Pardon my little squiggly there, but you get the idea. That has 8. Oh, yes, that's better. And I don't see a longer chain in there, so I think we're going to use this. Now, the question is, what's attached and where? Well, we have something attached here that's a 2 and a 2. And here's something attached at position 4, 5, 6. Here's something that's attached at 6 and something that's attached at 7. Okay. I wonder if we would do any better going in the other direction. Well, if we were to start from here, this would be something at position 2 and 3. 4, 5, position 5, 6, and 7, 7. Well, we could have 2, 2, 4, 6, and 7. Or we can have 2, 3, 5, and 7, 7. I believe our first choice was the first one. So we're going to start here. This is going to be a 2. And a 2 here. All right, now let's name it. At the positions 2 and 2, we have methyl groups. So we have 2, 2. Now, do we have any more methyls? Let's see. We took care of that one, and we took care of that one. Let's come down here. Oh, that's an ethyl right there. See? Ethyl. It would help if I would cross my T's and finish out my E's. That's an ethyl, so we can't... 2, 2, 4, 6. Look, here's a methyl right here at 6 and a methyl at 7. So it's 2, 2, 6, 7. How many methyls now? 4. So that's tetramethyl. And now what else did we say? Oh, yeah, we have an ethyl at 4. So it is 4-ethyl. And what is it? It's 8 carbons, so it is octane. Get the idea? Now let's reverse the process. I'm going to give you the name, and I want you to give me the structure. Now on the first one, we'll pause for just briefly and kind of let you get yourself oriented, and then we'll show you how to do it. Two, three dimethyl pentane. Let's start with our 5-carbon chain. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 carbons to make pentane. Now what do we have attached? Well, at carbons 2 and 3, we have a methyl group. So there's a CH3 here. And I'll just write, this one could be written below or it could be written above, but I'll just write it above if you don't mind. So there are our 2 methyl groups. Now we have to fill in with a hydrogen. Well, this carbon right here, this carbon, needs 3. So here are our 3 hydrogens for it. This carbon right here only needs 1. This carbon likewise only needs 1. This carbon needs 2, and this carbon will need 3. And there's our compound, 2,3-dimethylpentane. Now let's try this one, 2-methyl-3-ethylpentane, a 5-carbon chain again. So let's write out our 5 carbons. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Now, what do we have attached? Well, I like to start numbering from the left, but it doesn't matter which side you start numbering from as long as you're consistent. But I think I'll put a methyl group here. And there's an ethyl on carbon 3. And this is carbon 3, so I'm going to put a CH2CH3, my ethyl group up here, if you will. Yes. Now let's fill in with the hydrogens. This carbon will need 3 hydrogens. This one will only need 1. This one will only need 1. This one will require 2 carbons. And this one, of course, will need 3. And there we have it. Shall we try another? And let's make it a little different. What's wrong with this name? 2-ethyl-3-methyl-pentane. Well, let's try drawing it. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And at 2, we have an ethyl. All right, that's CH2, CH3. And at 3, we have a methyl. So that would be a CH3. Do you see what the problem is? If you were to count for the longest straight chain, instead of counting this way, which would give us 5, let's go back and let's see. You see that 5 now? Let's erase that 5. We can just go in here, I believe, and touch that off. Instead, let's number it a different way. Do you see a way to number it? How about numbering it like this? Let's see. Suppose we number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yes, that looks better. So I think what we have then is a hexane instead of a pentane. And this hexane has a methyl group here, and it has a methyl group here. So with that understanding now, let's go back and give a correct name for this. And then I think that will answer our question. So I will erase this line and this line right here. And I'll erase these 2 little lines here. And now I think we're ready to give this its new name. So what do you think? Let's see, if we fill this in, that's a CH3, and that's a CH, and that's a CH, and that's a CH2 and a CH3. I think we're going to have 1, 2, 3, 4,
5, 6 is our parent chain. So on carbon 3, we have a methyl. So we have, let's see, 3-methyl. And we also have a methyl on carbon 4 right here, don't we? So it's 3,4-dimethyl hexane. There, that looks much better.
It's time to talk about the properties of alkanes, particularly the physical properties. Well, alkanes have relatively low boiling points and melting points. They have low boiling points, which means they evaporate very readily. They have low melting points. It's very easy to turn a solid form into a liquid form. They are insoluble in water and other polar solvents. If you put them in water, they very often float. But they are soluble in nonpolar solvents like other alkanes and carbon tetrachloride and benzene. They're very soluble in those. And as I mentioned earlier, not only do they not dissolve in water, they're less dense than water. Hence, they tend to float. Their odors range from very mild to very pungent, very gasoline-like. And that makes sense since they are a large component of gasoline. They are flammable, so you have to be careful. They are flammable. Now, the first four are gases. The first four are gases, methane, ethane, propane, and butane. Those are gases at room temperature. And you're going to notice that as the compounds get larger, as you get more carbons in there, the boiling point is going to get higher. So that heptane has a higher boiling point than hexane, for example. Some of the common alkanes that you have met and have had experience with but didn't know they were alkanes are gasoline. Gasoline is composed of a number of different alkanes and some other things like benzene and so forth. And paraffin wax. Paraffin wax is an alkane, a very large alkane. Mineral oil is an alkane. Petroleum jelly is an alkane. These are some of the common alkanes that you probably deal with on virtually a day-by-day basis. The reactions of alkanes. Alkanes are generally non-reactive, and you're going to find that compared to other classes of organic compounds, they really are non-reactive, except they are very flammable. And especially the lighter ones, they really burn so very readily because of the gases. They can form an explosive mixture very readily. So it's important. You should remember that anytime you have hydrogen bonded to carbon, you should expect to have the potential for flammability. It's not always the case, but it so very often is. So remember, if you've got a carbon bonded to a hydrogen, you may be dealing with a compound that is flammable. And it's the combustion reaction of alkanes that you really ought to know. And we've looked at it before back when we were balancing equations. Let's use normal butane as an example. Now, I'll write it out like this at first, but you're not going to like it. And I will show you butane plus oxygen is going to give you carbon dioxide and water. But I think you're going to feel more comfortable with it like this. The butane plus the oxygen giving you carbon dioxide and water. And now if I were to ask you to balance it, you would be able to follow the rules that we talked about when we were balancing equations. So balance it. It's easier to balance it written as C4H10 than it is to balance it with the CH3CH2CH2CH3. Because you're more likely to miscount your hydrogens on the top one than you are on the bottom one. Cyclic alkanes. Let's look at cycloalkanes for a moment. Now, cycloalkanes are very strongly related to alkanes. They're similar except for two things. Number one, they have a ring structure.
They have a ring structure. Well, that's why they're called cycloalkanes. And the formula for alkanes, remember, is CnH2n plus 2. Well, the formula for the cyclic alkanes, the cycloalkanes, is CnH2n. That's right, two of those possible positions for hydrogen to bond are lost when the compound runs around and forms a ring. Now, if you have your models, I want you to build the smallest ring structure you can and see if it fits that formula. If you don't have models, use your pen and paper and draw what you think is the smallest possible ring structure. Think about it. The smallest ring structure is cyclopropane. It's a carbon bonded to a carbon, bonded to another carbon. Yeah, that's right, making that ring. And then hydrogen is attached here, 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 and here. That's right. And so you have C3H6, and that is the smallest possible cyclic alkane that you can have. Now, we represent it a different way, so that you don't have to write down all those carbons and hydrogens. Write it like this. And what this tells you then is this is three carbons. Each of those angles is a carbon. And at each of those angles, the carbon is going to have a hydrogen on it, or two hydrogens on it, whatever number of hydrogens it must take in order to have its four bonds. But we represent cyclopropane with a triangle. Got the idea? Now, cyclobutane. Cyclobutane is going to be how many carbons? That's right, it's going to be four. There it is. Do you see? Well, what about cyclopentane? Well, cyclopentane, then, you would write like this. And remember, at each of those angles now is enough hydrogen to make each of the carbons have a total of four bonds. Well, what is this? Or you might write it like this. Either one, it's the same thing. And what is it? That's right. It's cyclohexane. And folks, let me tell you, larger rings than cyclohexane don't tend to exist. We can have a seven-carbon one, but it's not very common. Your most common rings are these three that you have here, plus the cyclopropane. So there are four common rings, cyclopropane, cyclobutane, cyclopentane, and this one, which is cyclohexane. Now let's see if you can name the ring structures. For example, try naming this. You say, but how do I find a parent chain? Is it just that one carbon? No. Let's let the ring be the parent chain. And if the ring is the parent chain, then what's the name? Methyl cyclohexane. Now folks, we assume that the methyl group is on carbon 1. Or wherever the methyl group is attached is what we're going to call carbon 1, if methyl is the only thing that's attached there. So this is just methyl cyclohexane. You don't need to say 1-methyl cyclohexane at all. Let's try another. What about this one? Now we have two methyl groups, don't we? Well, if we have two methyl groups, there are several different ways they can be positioned. So we have to number the methyl groups. And this becomes, what do you think? 1,3-dimethylcyclohexane. 1,3-dimethylcyclohexane. See? Got the idea? Well, what about this one? Oh. All right, what have I got on there? Well, I have a methyl group on there. And I have an isopropyl. Well, which one is carbon 1? And I'm telling you that for our purposes, it doesn't matter. You can call this 1-methyl-3-isopropyl cyclopentane, or you may call it 1-isopropyl-3-methyl cyclopentane. Either one will be just fine. Here, try this one. Well, guess what? This is 1-methyl-3-isopropyl cyclopentane, isn't it? Or 1-isopropyl-3-methyl cyclopentane. We just turned the ring around a little bit. So don't get locked into this idea that the very top spot, the one up on the very top, is going to be site number one, because it's not. These things can be like the steering wheel of a car, and they can turn around. Let's talk about classifying carbons for a moment. To classify carbons, we call them either primary, and a primary carbon is a carbon that's attached to one other carbon. A carbon attached to one other carbon. We have a secondary carbon. And a secondary carbon, logically then, is a carbon attached to two other carbons. Two other carbons. Tertiary. A tertiary carbon is one that's attached to three other carbons. Three other carbons. Well, you might figure it. Quaternary is a carbon attached to four other carbons. Four other carbons. Got the idea? Primary, secondary, tertiary, and quaternary. And that's an important distinction to be able to make, because we often talk about reactions that occur at secondary carbons or reactions that occur at primary carbons, and you need to know what we're talking about. Now, let's classify the carbons in this compound. There it is in your book. Now you go through and see if you can classify them. What's this? Yeah, it's a primary or first degree, isn't it? The same as this one, this one, this one, and this one. Yes. Now what about secondary? Do you see any secondary carbons in there? Sure. There's one, there's one, and there's another. Do you notice what they have in common? How many hydrogens do they have? Let's go to a tertiary. A tertiary or third-degree carbon. See them? There, there, and there. Yeah, tertiary or third-degree carbon. Oh, do we have a quaternary? No, we don't have a quaternary. They don't happen very often, but they do happen some. Well, we have covered a lot. We talked about an introduction in which we were talking about how organic compounds are so different. Using alkanes, we introduced the homologous series concept. We talked about nomenclature, and in nomenclature, we laid a foundation for nomenclature that will follow you through the rest of this course. We talked about properties of alkanes and reactions of alkanes, and we mentioned briefly some cyclic alkanes in which the compounds can form rings. It's a fascinating subject.